This is Katie Baucus, one of the writers of episode 519, Ian Garvey Conclusion. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Something about winging the podcast tonight has an exciting flair to it. Welcome to the award-winning Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Engineer Peterson, and much like Mossadegh, I thought I was getting one problem handled this week, only to get shot in the chest again.
Three times.
Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 13 on the Blacklist, Evil Glenn. I mean, Ian Garvey, written by Kate Baucus and directed by Court Hessler. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found where? At theblacklistexposed.com.
You still said Ian. That's funny.
Ian, it's whatever I feel like at that moment in particular.
Don't matter, he dead.
How are you feeling? We don't know that for sure.
For sure. Right? His hand dropped and his blood pressure was dropping.
He could be in WITSEC right now for all we know.
He could be.
I don't know about you, but I'm drinking this week.
I am absolutely drinking. I think I started when the show ended and I haven't stopped. So this should be fun.
This should be entertaining. Before we get there, we've got some business to take care of, Troy.
Yeah. First and foremost, we want to let you know that we will be recording the podcast for the last 4 weeks on Wednesday nights immediately after the show. So if you want to get your special agent intel in, you'll have to do that ASAP after the show ends, because we got lots of stuff to do on Thursdays. So we got to record a day early for these last four episodes. Secondly, we asked all of you last time, who is the man that wants to meet with Ian Garvey?
Sorry, I needed to start my drink. All right. Monica Stolfa says Jelly Bean. He wants to see who this evil Glenn is and why he is dragging his good name in the mud. Cute.
Judy Miller said someone from a Chinese drug syndicate.
Everyone else said Mossadegh.
Yep, I guess everybody else is right, and I just really overthought this question last week.
Quite a bit.
But Monica, I heart you. Thanks for playing along.
Yeah, that was very sweet.
All right, let's get on to this episode. Next profiling question for next week. I think we're all kind of feeling it. Is it finally time to clarify this freaking relationship?
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
We got some stuff to talk about. And this is it. You know what? Hang tight.
We'll get to it because I need to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the morning. So let's go ahead and get to this week's case profile.
All right. Ian Garvey.
It's off the rails already.
Why do we call them both names? Because I like it. Because really, I've heard it both ways. This episode is all about a double cross. Garvey picks money over the answers he needs and plots to kill Red for Mossadegh to keep his supply line moving. And so Mossadegh can apparently not have to worry about some insinuating photos of his son, as we understood it.
Correct.
Red, however, conspires with Riley Sinclair. John Noble comes back. Woo! And poor Anthony. Please don't get killed, Anthony. To dupe us all and double Garvey to frame him for killing Mossadegh. So they basically make a double of Garvey and frame him, making Garvey desperate. Garvey gets away, runs to Jennifer, Liz catches up. They almost tell us something useful, and then Red and Garvey both get shot, with Garvey possibly no longer being alive. Now, we always go through the crux of the episode, then we'll break down every character. But let's start here, okay? That's basically what happened. I will say, this was an intense episode. I thought, until the last 5 minutes, a fantastic episode. What do you say about that? Before we get to the last 5 minutes, what do you say about that part of it?
Yeah, so for 55 minutes, enthralled. Love the twists. I did not see the old switcheroo coming that he was doubling as Garvey. That was great. Loved the Liz going out on her own to try to take him down herself. And then the whole Jennifer stepping in and like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm Jennifer. Everything was great. Yep, 55 minutes, absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and we're going to wait to talk about the last 5 minutes
until we get to Red.
Once we get to Red, you'll understand what we're saying. I think you're going to get it. But yeah, I do want to say, this was an exciting, riveting episode. It's just how it ended that I think we have a problem with. But like I said, we're going to get there, because there is some cool stuff to talk about. First and foremost, music.
That's right. As Red and Mossadegh walk through the park, at the beginning of the episode, we hear Reconfiguration by Other Lives. Then as Sinclair lays out the master plan, we enjoy some more It Could Be Shakedown, a familiar one to Blacklist fans. They got their song Assassin over the plan setup. And finally, at the end of the episode, River Matthews' great cover version of House of the Rising Sun as Garvey gets the draw on Red, except Red always gets his man.
There's a little something in there for you, too, I think. But we'll come back to that one. All right, so in terms of characters, you know what? We're going to be able to breeze through a few of them pretty quick because there's not a whole lot of character movement this week on certain ones. Cooper, Wrestler, and Samar are mostly sidelined for the week. They're just doing basic FBI antics, except for Cooper, who has some sincere concern for Red. I thought that was a really funny moment.
That was a great moment for them.
I'm still basking in. That was great. That was a great line. And Samar is kind of cold about giving Aram his stuff back. I mean, she's all, yay, I'll bring it in. Oh, kind of what? Nah, just bring it in. It's fine. We've all been there, people. Let me tell you.
I think that was kind of a shock in this episode, actually. She gives a ring back, and you're kind of like, are they breaking up? And I didn't really get the feeling that they had broken up in the last episode.
Yeah, I thought it was, we're going to put things on the back burner for a little bit.
Right.
We're going to just put this on the shelf. We'll come back to it. We'll revisit when we understand where we are. I didn't realize the relationship is over kind of thing. Over a ring, that just feels extreme to me.
Yeah, it was the first time this episode I was kind of like, did I miss something?
Yeah, that was a little, I don't know how I felt about it, but I have been there when you break up with somebody and they're like, oh yeah, I'll give you your stuff back, no problem. And you're just like, hey, shouldn't you love me more? Shouldn't you be sadder? Why aren't you under your desk weeping right now? That's kind of how I think Aram wants her to feel.
I guess the whole buildup between the two of them, I think, is why it didn't seem like they broke up last week. I thought it was more like, hey, just give this to me when you're ready. And they kind of both had a mutual understanding. It's just that the mutual understanding happened to be a complete 180 from what we thought last week. And from that reason, I think the characters are still technically written well and written correctly because they both view the situation the same way. They're both in mutual agreement. Although Ram seemed a little bit more trepidatious than Samar. I could never do it.
I can't stop shipping, Captain. I thought they broke up or they were taking a break or something in the last episode. So it was just kind of a surprise that we're getting rid of toothbrushes and things. I just felt like that was a bit much. But hey, you got set up for what's coming, I assume. I assume there's going to be some stuff.
I assume so as well, based on an interview that you might have missed if you didn't know that we talked to Mr. Arison himself last week. So go check that out in the feed, episode number 111, if you missed it.
You should. It's a great interview, and he also talks about his movie 20 Weeks, which I highly recommend people check out. Moving on, Dembe. He didn't really have a whole lot to do this week, but him and Red have a thing for Lavender. I mean, he does have a lot to do, but there's nothing vocal that he really has, except he and Red really bond over Lavender, and I thought that was kind of funny. That was sweet until it ended in a car wreck.
They also bond a lot over card and table games.
Oregon Trail, that's right. I did forget that. Man.
It was funny. It's like, oh, and Red died of dysentery. I was like, sweet. That's so good.
That was pretty good.
And now I have to go buy that card game because I didn't realize it was an actual card game.
It is. It's a real game. And also, I really dug that when they're kicking back, you know, the last few episodes, you've seen them kind of relaxing, eating, cooking, playing card games. I mean, they're really like the Odd Couple.
That I would pay to get made. I would give my life savings to see Red and Dembe in an Odd Couple remake.
Hang on, man. Your life savings? Because that feels a bit much.
It's only $20.
Spend it all on Blacklist t-shirts?
That's got kids.
Yeah, that's right. College, man.
College!
All right, Aram, he gives Samar her keys back. She takes them. Sad panda. A little bit of a sad panda. But he also figures out Red double-crossed them. And then helps Red when he knew he shouldn't. I mean, I don't know. Did you feel like, well, you even acknowledge that you shouldn't help, but you still help?
Well, he has to acknowledge something because he thinks that Liz might be in trouble. So he's really more helping Liz by divulging the fact that he helped because Liz is in trouble and he needs to save his buddy.
I get that. But I mean, at that point, because Red just double-crossed him, everybody's mad. I think at that point, I'm checking with the boss first. I'm like, hang on, Mr. Red. Let me go ring Cooper real quick. He's very worried about your safety. I'm going to double check with him, see if we're all good.
Also, I was trying to remember if in season 3, episode 1, The Troll Farmer, if we already did the hide the car in another car under the underpass trick.
I don't care. It's still cool. I still like it. I mean, that one, once you knew what happened, you can kind of figure out the rest of it from there. But the big switcheroo, even though it takes some logic swallowing, I still thought it was a really cool move. But we're not there yet, so hold tight.
Hold tight.
All right. Were you happy to see John Noble back as the master doublemaker, Riley Sinclair?
This one actually was, because the whole conversation between him and Red specifically on the whole, I can't do it, I need a whole year, it takes a lot of planning. It was very much John Noble-esque, that as I remember him from the Fringe days, where he's just kind of like this manic, kind of mad scientist, but in a completely different light. I love when John plays that character. So I absolutely was enthralled by the entire thing about how he put the plan together. I was dictating everything and showing everything. I loved it. It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, I love John Noble. It was great to see him back. Because thankfully, he's one blacklister that's not dead, so he can come back and back and back. Hopefully, he keeps being part of the show. It'd be fun if he's a bigger part of the show at some point.
That would be great.
I do want to say kudos to the writers. It's a brilliant plan. Even with the logic you have to swallow, it's a brilliant twist that really got me the whole time thinking, well, that still looks like Jane Spader. I mean, I guess if you're trying to, I mean, they both were obviously the actual actors.
Right.
Really, yeah, there was no person in makeup there. It was definitely Ian Garvey. But, you know, I'm willing to swallow some logic. I've seen Mission Impossible. I can swallow the logic here. And it was a fun switcheroo because I didn't even think about Ian Garvey. Until somebody's really annoyed that I keep doing that, and I don't care. But I did not see that coming at all, and it all worked. In hindsight, Troy was really mad, like, well, when did they get the real Ian Garvey? And then, like, 5 minutes later, he's like, all right, they showed it. I'm good.
Hashtag trust the process.
Yeah,
hashtag trust the process. I literally was like, the whole commercial, I was like, did I fall asleep? Did I miss something?
Yeah. Like, when did they get him? I don't remember that happening.
And then sure enough, it was like, well, here, let me explain it to you. It was like, oh, thanks.
Well, if they would have showed us, then the twist doesn't work. You know, it's not a twist, just a sequence of events. So, all right. Now we're there. I told you we were going to get through most of these characters.
When did you actually get the switcheroo? Like, at what point were you like, oh, crap?
As soon as he moved the gun. As soon as he took the gun from Red to Mossadegh, I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm stupid then, because I didn't get it until Sinclair said, drive, drive. But I was like, oh, snap, it's the other double. Okay, I get it.
Wow, man.
I was late.
I'm glad you're not in the military or the detective of any kind, because you can't solve crimes.
No, because I was trying to figure it out, and that's when I thought I might have missed how they actually got the real Garvey.
it was a cool twist. Speaking of Ian Garvey, is it Ian or Ian?
Ian. She says, it's Ian.
She said Ian at the top of the hour, didn't she?
She said Ian.
Okay, Ian Garvey. He plots for the Mossadegh to kill Red, only to be snatched up and framed. So Red does a masterstroke, because not only does he kill Mossadegh, use Garvey to kill Mossadegh, or Garvey's double to do that, he also manages to frame him. So now he's got to go on the run. Now he has to go to Red for help. That was actually a pretty genius freaking plan.
That's pretty impressive, I have to say.
I never thought of it.
That's not how I thought this was going to go down this week at all.
Mm-mm. No, I didn't think that was going to happen. He escapes, he runs to Jennifer, and he gets himself shot. But he does say something very, 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 very important to Jennifer. He does know that Red, or he did not know that Red was Liz's dad. That came as a surprise to him. So I think we've been operating from maybe he knew that, maybe he doesn't. He 100%, we've solved that mystery. He did not know. Agreed?
Agree.
Okay. Now, what he says to Jennifer, everything you believed in the last 30 years is a lie. You spent a lifetime in hiding for no reason. So that's a big line. What do you take away from that?
That's the one I'm still trying to put together in my head. I mean, that one is just perplexing, because if she didn't need to hide in the first place, then does that mean that Red is actually her dad or not her dad? And was this all just a ruse because it's a larger game plan of something else? So I don't know if I have enough information yet to make a formalized opinion. I mean, I could say, Well, yeah, it makes sense because you didn't need to hide from your father because, in my opinion, he's not the father because Katarina. But you can't really pull any of that theory from what was exchanged in this episode. I think the only thing you could pull away from this episode is that it's leaning more Poster theory again because of the fact that even Red, when he says Jennifer, doesn't seem like it's like, Jennifer, oh my gosh, my daughter. It's like, oh, you're Jennifer. Mm-hmm. The Jennifer. Okay. Put that for a mental note later. I might need that. It's kind of how, that's how it portrayed. That's how it came across to me, at least on the screen.
Yeah. The one thing I will say that I took away from it, and this is just an opinion because there's no facts or concurrence, it's just an opinion, is that that indicates that she might mean something to Reddington, but it's not his daughter. And why that would matter is that maybe Garvey, well, he has the bones, so he might know that big secret, which is that that Reddington's possibly in the bag. So that's definitely a theory in play. I mean, I would say that that theory is definitely in play. And the J. Edgar Hoover line keeps your Red as Katarina theory in play. So, there's
funny.
All kinds of things keeping theories in play. Well, we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
We said the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Everything you believed in the last 30 years is a lie. You spent a lifetime in hiding for no reason. What do you guys think that meant? I mean, I'd love to see you hit the Facebook group, The Blacklist Exposed, on Facebook. And please debate, discuss, and come up with your own conclusions. Maybe somebody's got an idea we never even thought of.
That's true.
That's what I'm hoping for. But he gets, and he seems to die at the end. Or at least he's clinging to life.
Yeah.
So we don't know if he's dead, but he sure didn't look good. Yeah. Doesn't look good. Jennifer, we do confirm she is Jennifer. That's confirmed, so we can stop speculating, even though I think we already assumed that. She learns from Liz about the Nash Syndicate in Reddington and still wants to protect Garvey. I think that's very sweet. I would, too, if I was in her shoes. Agree? Yeah? No? Maybe?
I mean, yeah, you have to grain of salt, right? I got this new information. I'm going to play it out. I'm going to see what I was surprised at how forthcoming Garvey was. He's like, I can explain all that. He was just open and honest. So at least from that perspective, he seems like a pretty good caretaker, that at least he was truthful, which Reddington, we don't know if he has or has not been, even though he's not supposed to lie to Liz, but it seems like he lies quite a bit.
Yeah, he sure does, but she sees him as her daddy, at least daddy figure, one of the two. So it'll be interesting. I think there's a cool line that her and Liz throw back at each other. I think we both know it's a little too late for that, for the sisterly bond. I really hope it's not. I mean, I kind of like the character. I think she's got a little heart and spirit in her. So I think it'd be fun to see Liz and her bounce off each other if they are related in some way, you know, or in some fashion. If that ultimately proves to be the case, which I don't believe they are, but you never know.
And Katie,
you never know with this show.
Yeah, and Katie did that twice in this episode where there was a line earlier between the two of them and then she brings it back. But then when you had that confrontation about the J. Edgar Hoover apartment and Liz and Red had that confrontation, then Liz throws Red's lines back at him as well. I love the counterbalance of those lines being thrown back and forth at each other. I thought that was really great writing and a great way to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. She does say some things when she does confront Red. I think we both know it's too late for that. Christmas Eve, sitting in my pink room, my pink pajamas, waiting for Santa. Went to sleep happy, woke up with the world destroyed. Her good and decent daddy was gone. Doesn't say dead. Doesn't say anything else. Doesn't say anything other than was gone. So, in basically, her dad, Reddington, left. And she doesn't know what happened. And then she came to find out that he was not a good man to begin with. He was a criminal. And it happened on Christmas Eve. So,
well, she came to know that this person that we see now, this Raymond Reddington, is a criminal. So she's assuming two are together.
She came to know that her dad, who she knew as Raymond Reddington, was a master criminal, ultimately a master criminal. So whoever that it may be, you know, that was her dad. Raymond Reddington, she thought, was her dad anyway.
Well, I took it as her dad is Raymond Reddington.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Christmas Eve, dad was gone. And then she learned that he was a master criminal.
Right.
Because
that's what I said.
Because she's learning the new stuff. But it's her perception of what her dad is. It's not like it is her dad, right? Because you were saying about the whole...
That's what I said. Well, she thinks it's her dad.
Yes.
You know, yep. We don't know for sure if that's sure. We just, you know, I guess if you take her, she only knows what she's been told.
Correct. So. Yes. Okay.
So we'll find out. But that, you know, when Garvey's got his line in there about everything, you know, believe in the last 30 years is a lie. He spent a lifetime in hiding for no reason. That kind of makes you wonder.
Makes you wonder.
All right, Liz, we're shooting Liz. Bonds with Jennifer a little bit, which I really hope they get some more time together. I like their shot at the end of the episode when he's going wheeling into the hospital room and you see the two together and they almost could be sisters. You find out Tom died for a reason. You know why, and you won't tell me. She does know that. She says that to Red. And, of course, you know, Reddington has his reply, which we'll mention here in a second. Liz bugs him, or bugs Jennifer, which leads her to the Reddington murder plot and Aram to Jennifer, ultimately. So all that is connected, in a way, because that bug makes both those things happen. That Red knows there's a plot, and Aram later can locate Jennifer. And of course, Liz hangs up on Red and also turns her gun on him. But also, when she turns her gun on him, is extremely emotional and says she doesn't want to do this. This is the last thing she wants to do, but she wants the truth that bad, she's willing to shoot Red over it. Are you surprised by that turn of events?
I was, actually. The fact that I wasn't expecting her to turn around and point it at Red, but I can understand where she's coming from in that moment. Because every single member of the watching audience felt exactly the same way. Like, we are at this moment. All four of us are here. Give me something. Just give me anything at this point. And I can totally understand her frustration. And especially if she truly did love Tom like she did, and clearly she obviously has, I would be wanting the answers too at this point, because I need to know why my husband died. Even if it was his own stupidity, because Fred told him, don't get involved.
Yep. Somebody's getting grounded. That's what I got out of that.
2 weeks, no phone.
Yeah. Yeah. She's happy for Garvey to, no burner phone. She's happy for Garvey to go to jail for whatever. I like that. I thought that was actually kind of, I don't care why he's going. He's just going. I thought that was great.
Well, and it was nice too to hear her at least be convicted in the fact that she wanted to see him in jail. So she's not completely on the dark side, where she just came in and like literally put one in his ankle and then started grilling him or whatever. She truly wanted to arrest him. And I love that she's still keeping to her FBI roots.
I agree. She's not going full criminal. She wanted to do the quote unquote right thing. And she's unwilling to deal with Red's crap anymore. She wants the story, which is ironic coming from us. So... All right, lastly, we move on to Red, who has more in common with J. Edgar Hoover than you'd think. One, they always get their man. And two, if you didn't know, J. Edgar Hoover was a noted crossdresser. That is a nice little tip, I would assume, to Katerina theorists who think that Red is actually Katerina. Do you think it was, maybe, Troy?
At the end of the day, if Red Arena doesn't actually happen, I just love the fact that hopefully that they've picked up on it and are writing this stuff just to play with us, because it's fun. It's actually fun. I laughed out loud. I was like, that's great. Bravo.
I did too. And then my eyes rolled in the back of my head and going, well, Troy's going to have fun with that one. Oh boy.
It's good.
I was hoping you didn't even know who J. Edgar. I'm like, well, what did he do? He was just the FBI head of that.
Oh no.
That guy.
Yeah, well aware. Everybody knows him. Well aware.
You just never know.
He could just like cross-dressing to have a fun time too. It doesn't have to be necessarily that he was Katerina. I'm not judging.
Liz may think that she's entitled to know about the bones, but she's not. That's what Red point blank tells her. Okay. I mean, fair enough, but I don't think that's a good enough answer for most people. Would you agree? I mean, well, that's really kind of a cop-out.
I was trying to balance that conversation with the other confrontation conversation they had, where it was like, this is a secret I have to keep. I have to keep it even from you. It made it sound like in that conversation when he said that, if it was more about, it was more connected to her and it was for her protection. So it does concern her. And then to have this conversation, it seemed like it was almost a little counterintuitive, because she's like, it doesn't concern you. It isn't your problem. So those two things in my mind are kind of conflicting right now.
I stick with what I said. I'm of the mindset that if I was her, that's a cop-out. It's just a total cop-out. But, you know, That's how Red's going to play it. When he confronts Garvey, though, I loved his line. I loved his line. Don't say a word about it. I will shoot you. I thought that was just a great moment, great scene. And I thought Spader was just fantastic in that moment. And I want to point out when Jennifer stands in front of him and she's talking to Spader and she's saying, I'm your daughter and everything else. And a lot of people are talking about how Red has little reaction to Jennifer saying she's his daughter. And I would agree with that. So I'm not discounting that. I actually think he has very little emotional reaction to that moment. I would also say Red often has little emotional reaction to most things. But he does take his finger off the trigger the second he realizes that.
He did.
Yep. He takes his finger and everyone several times. He completely takes his finger out of the trigger holder, out of the trigger, and rests it on the trigger guard. So he did not want to hurt her in any way, shape, or form. And that mattered to him. So I do think there is some connection. I just don't know if he's necessarily her father. He just knows who she is for sure.
Yeah, he has
been looking for her.
Yeah, there is a connection that to the whole plot that he's like, okay, I know that you're Jennifer. I know I asked Naomi where you were. How they're connected, we don't know, but at least it is connected to the story.
Well, they're telling us something, but yeah.
They're just going to let it play out over 3 more episodes.
All right, now we're here. We're here. We got all through all the characters. We did what we normally did. We gave you what you need. Now we're going to give you what we need. This is, by the way, Katie, you did a great job.
Fabulous job, Katie. Round of applause.
Before
this
we
is not
talk,
on you at all.
Please don't take anything personal because it's 100% not on you or the cast. The episode was great until the last 5 minutes. The ramping things up, making you think we're finally going to get some tangible answer to either the bones, which started last season, or to the secret, get something tangible, is getting old. And I'm sorry, I love this show. I mean, we both love this show. We 100%, we do a podcast about it. We've raved about it many times. We're building up to something, and then the situation is very soap opera-esque, how we don't get an answer, and you basically are left with no chance for an answer again. That is very frustrating as a fan. And it's not this one time. It's that it's been done, I think, I think it's officially at too many times. And it really left me aggravated as a fan. This time was probably the one too many for me. I really got aggravated at the end of the episode. And I love the episode until then.
Yeah, in the video game world, we're constantly playing this level over and over and over and over again. It would have been Super Mario 8-2 of the original Super Mario game for me.
I don't know what that means at all.
those that have played 8-2 will understand. But okay. When you play that level over and over and over again and you just can't beat it and you throw your controller down and the controller smashes on the ground and your mom is pissed because you have to like buy a new controller and it costs a lot of money. It's a long-winded way of saying, I literally chucked my remote at the television tonight. I was so frustrated because it was like, okay, we're going to get something. No, we're going to wait till after the commercial break. Oh, okay, we're going to get something. No, we're going to wait till we cut back to the post office. And then he's like coming in on the gurney. It's like, just whisper Katarina or something. Just whisper something on your dying breath for God's sakes. And then nothing happens. And you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, and you know what? I know we'll get 3 awesome episodes. Three left. I know we'll get 3 awesome episodes. I know the finale is probably going to rock. They do every year, and there's been tons of... And we have defended every along the way. You go listen to the podcast. We always have. This is the one time where I'm going to put my foot down and say, you did it too much because this really irked me. Don't build it up like I'm getting something again and then give me nothing. And I think, you know, it would be easy to just dilute this conversation as being negative or something along those lines. And I don't think that's fair because we've been entirely positive about the show. And I believe in everything we've ever said. At some point you can't tease something about the same situation over and over and over and not really give you something. And I know they've given some answers along the way, but it's this whole, we'll find something out and then we don't. We'll find something out and then we don't. We'll find something out and characters die or don't have the conversation or don't ask the question or anything else about that one particular thing too many times, it becomes very frustrating from a fan's perspective. We have to have something to continue moving forward. And I still love the show. I'm going to keep moving forward. I'm not saying anything like that. But there comes a point where I think you owe me at this point. And maybe that's the wrong way to look at it. Maybe that's not fair. But as sticking with it for 5 years, just don't do that to me. I feel like that's been done too many times. And it's this particular time just really, really got under my skin. And I'm really, I hope I'm not hurting any listeners' feelings or writers' feelings or anything else. I'm just trying to be honest about it. It really, really bugged me. And I don't know any other way to say it than an emotional, because it's coming from a place of passion, because I love the show. And it's a place of passion. When you get to that moment and you think I'd know by now, I'm not going to get anything. But I feel like I should have got something. I mean, the bones, some kind of confirmation of anything. I don't care. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just went on a whole tangent. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine, because I'm sitting there going, I know I'm not going to get anything about the bones. John told us, even on this podcast, you know, it's a cliffhanger. It's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. End of the season. Don't expect an answer. I'm fine. But when you're standing there and we've introduced Jennifer, and Jennifer's standing in front of Red, and Red just says Jennifer and nothing else, like, you have to give me at least why she was put into the witness protection, why he disappeared on Christmas. You know, you got to give me something about that relationship in that moment, because we've waited 3.5 seasons for Jennifer to show up. Fans have been asking about her for 3.5 seasons. Like, what about that hanging Chad? Why is she still out there? Now she's standing there and they're all together, and not even like a morsel of the backstory of that particularly was even like, for me, to the point, like, I love the show. Like, I have like the entire wall of my studio has got Blacklist stuff all over it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
True story.
So, I mean, at that point I was just kind of like, I can't believe we got zero on a conclusion episode of all that. Like, we made it Ian Garvey conclusion and there wasn't anything. Like, zero. I mean, it advanced the story to set it up for the last three, which we understand are going to be absolutely freaking epic. But at the same time, the writers and John and everybody are probably saying, we gave you the answers, they're on the screen. You know, you guys are the ones that keep saying, no, it's not that. No, it's that. You guys keep theorizing and you keep doing whatever. But I mean, like Aaron was saying, I think they've caused that to happen to the point now where we're still theorizing because of the pull back and forth of the tease, constantly teasing. At this point, we almost said it at the end of season four, and I think we said it at the end of season four, we're at the point in the show now, and 5 years in, you have to give something 100% concrete. And that concrete could open up new stories, and it could go 7, 8, 9, 10 seasons, but you got to give something concrete at this point. And I think tonight was the, here's something concrete, here's how it's going to set up the next three episodes, and then boom, here's the slap you upside the head with everything that you need to know. But man, it was like, not getting something concrete tonight was kind of frustrating, to be quite honest.
It was, I think the reason why it hurt me as a fan, I mean, it's a TV show. I realize it's just entertainment. But you've got every character that's been in play that knows this secret in a room. Dembe knows. Red knows. Garvey knows. The only people that don't know are Liz and Jennifer. And at any point, one of them could have said anything that would have given something, even if it was just a shout and then a gunshot, you know, just to give us a little taste, you know. But instead, we get what we kind of figured what was going to happen as soon as the shootout starts, which is Garvey's going to get killed before he can say anything. And we're like, don't do that again. I feel like we've done that before, and here we go. And you just pulled that with Tom. I mean, Tom just had that. That's literally what happened with Tom. He had the information, and he got killed before he could give it to anyone. That's why it's frustrating.
Yeah, the best example I can come up with is...
Now, he might still be alive. I'm not saying. Maybe next week, maybe in the next episode, 5 minutes in, Garvey wakes up and be like, oh, by the way, that's not your dad, Jennifer. Just letting you know.
And then we all, and then Aaron, and then he dies. And then Aaron and I come back on here and we apologize because we're like, you got to trust the process, let the show play out.
No,
they always answer things very quickly.
I agree with everything. I've said that in so many episodes. They do answer things very quickly. It's very possible in the next episode we'll get that information. But the way it was handled here, it's done, been done one too many times. I wasn't happy when it was over, which it shouldn't be unhappy because I love the episode until the last 4 minutes. I love the episode. And
And I think it's partly, I hate to say it's like the network's fault, but with the scheduling and the constant, we've had a break here and a break here. And I know we have to have the breaks because the writers need time and the actors need time.
You do lose some momentum.
You lose momentum. And then you get this buildup like, oh, the show's back and it's a conclusion episode. Like you're amped up for something big. And then when nothing big happens, you're just like, you kind of get a little rage monster going on.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing. I think it's important as a fan to get passionate and frustrated and joyous about things. I think if you over glamorize it, like everything is great, then maybe that's too much. And if you're always negative on everything, it's probably too low. So, I mean, you got to final middle ground, you know, and there's a lot to praise in this episode. And I think it's actually pretty well constructed for an episode that really doesn't have a whole lot going on. It's a fun episode. It's really a fun heist episode, which we love those. It's just the setup at the end with no payoff again is really the frustrating part. And I'm sorry if we're going on too long about that, but this time, I mean, Troy and I both, you know, we both kind of had a visceral reaction to it. And it seems on the internet that fans did too. So we wanted to speak to it honestly.
And you've been listening for 112 episodes. You know, Aaron and I don't agree on anything.
Nothing.
So if we agree, there's something obviously something happened here.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to stress, it's not going to change my fandom of the show. I'm still going to watch the show. I love the show. I can't wait to see what's coming. I've heard great things from everybody, not just people involved, but you know, people that are even minorly involved. That the last three episodes are just going to be great. I have no doubt about that because every season's been that way. I remember in season two or season three? What was the season where everybody was like, when it was the year Liz faked her death,
yep.
I think, where
that
everybody
was
just, yeah, and this is gonna suck and da-da-da-da, and it ended up being a great ending. They always bring it home. So I'm not worried about that in any way, shape, or form. It's just the lining this up for some morsel and then stripping it away from us yet again. That has become a trope.
Yeah, I think
I'm not happy with.
If we're the conduit of the fans to the show, I think everybody's kind of saying it's time.
Give us something. Something.
It's time.
Yeah, put something to bed. I realize you're not going to give everything, and that's fine. You know, something you got to save for the finale. I get it, but you got to give something or step away from that as a whole for a while. One of the two. The bones have been a whole season thing. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We get it, the bones. But we're supposed to find that out by the end of the season.
I had a feeling we saw the bones at the end of season four. It was going to be like the whole season arc. So I'm who's
I did not. I did not. I obviously had a different plan. I mean, once again, we don't agree on that.
Yeah, who is in the bag does not bother me, but how it impacts the story and why it's tied into the story, absolutely want that answer, and I need that answer before it goes away. Or it's got to be such a great big cliffhanger. Like I cannot not come back for season six.
I'll be coming back no matter what, but I really feel like it's just give me a little something. A little something. I'm starting to jump on the bandwagon of that it's writing thing in the bag though. I don't know about you, but I'm starting to get there. Like the real Raymond writing thing. Yeah, I'm starting to think, hey, maybe.
So you're dumping your uncle theory for the imposter theory and joining the imposter theory train?
Still be uncle. Could easily still be uncle.
It still could be.
Could still be uncle. Could very easily be looking after his niece. You know, Liz, and then Jennifer just happens to be a stepdaughter. Maybe it was from an affair or something. Not really, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things at play. There's a lot of could be's. I don't know.
Which is why I reiterate, it's time.
It's time for something. Not everything, just something. Something concrete, you're right.
Something concrete enough that makes you go, wow, that's awesome, and I really want to know how that happened. So then you get a whole season six of explanation or something.
It's probably what I'm sure the bones will be that, yeah. You know, I have to feel like if it's this important a secret, it has to be that. So it'll be a bombshell. I hope nobody's throwing tomatoes at their audio player right now, but we just wanted to talk about that. All right.
I think we got people in our camp. We'll get to that in a minute.
Are you good?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, no, we didn't even mention Court Hessler. Court Hessler is the stunt coordinator. Actually won an Emmy for the stunts here on The Blacklist. This was his first director spot.
Well, now
on
I feel
show.
Bad. Court, you did a great job.
He did.
Not on you, man. This is five seasons of stuff kind of thing. It's not you.
Let's just say, even though we were frustrated about not getting an answer, the blocking in the sequence in the bar, like, I never saw that the gun was behind her back. And then for the gun to come out to shoot Reddington, I was like, oh, snap.
You didn't see it?
No, well, not until she moved and the gun was already being fired.
What? They gave it away, man. I mean, he did a great shot. You know, not we're kissing your ass or anything. I mean, legitimately a great shot. Where she's pleading with Red and she's got her hand and she's like sticking it out and waving her fingers a little bit, and he's starting to pull the gun out of his pocket.
Oh, I was focused on her face. I didn't even look down.
Well, this was a shot from behind, so her face wasn't there. It was just her bum. Oh, maybe you were focused on her bum.
Or I was looking at Red's reaction to see what Red's reaction was, potentially.
Can't see Red. It's literally like a lower posterior shot where it's just his pocket and her bottom, her rear, and then her hand kind of like stretched out a little bit. So her hand is a little bit distracting, and maybe that's where you got
distracted. Yeah, maybe that's where I missed it. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, he totally was pulling his gun out of his pocket. He was getting it ready. Hmm. For the move.
I missed it. So good directing, because my eyes were somewhere else. So that when it actually shot off, I was like, well, where'd that come from? I was excited.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We already talked about it. All right. We'll be right back.
Basically, at the end of the day, Katie, Court, good job. We liked
yes,
it.
Yes. Well, the whole, I mean, everybody did a good job.
Everybody, yeah.
It's a frustration based on this situation happening. And I'm just going over the whole thing we've already talked about. All right, we'll be right back with Reg's Rhetoric right after this.
What if you could go back in time and remake history?
If you're a fan of time travel stories, you should be watching Timeless. And if you're watching Timeless, you should be listening to Remaking History. That's a podcast where Karen, that's me,
and Doug, that's me, give you our thoughts on new episodes, but it's not just about our thoughts.
We want to hear what you think, too. Your theories and thoughts are what's best about the show.
So come on back to the back to the past with us. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
And discuss the show with us at goldenspiralmedia.com/remakinghistory or on our Facebook group. Just search for Remaking History.
And we'll see you next time.
Or perhaps last time on Remaking History.
Hey, Dembe Loyals. This is Hisham Taufik. You are listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from this week's episode of The Blacklist, and then you get to vote which one is your favorite in our poll over on the website. Just go to theblacklistexposed.com and look for the post for Ian Garvey, conclusion. This week's first clip comes when Red acquired some real estate.
This apartment, right here. Oh, my God. To have been the proverbial fly on Clyde Tolson's duvet.
Clyde Tolson lived here? J. Edgar Hoover's lover.
This was their secret hideaway. Imagine the conversations. Cooing over JFK's lovers, slandering Dr. King, what peignoir to wear to bed. When I saw the apartment was for sale, I couldn't resist.
You own the apartment where the homophobic head of the FBI carried on his affair with his boyfriend.
Allegedly. I wouldn't admit this in mixed company, but J. Edgar and I have a surprising amount in common. For instance, we both always get our man. He got Tolson, I got Garvey. Or I will by this time tomorrow.
Is this why you wanted to see me?
Mossadegh has ordered Garvey to bring me the duffel bag. Garvey thinks he's going to give it to me and walk away. I wanted you here to tell you I've made other arrangements.
To get your man and the bag.
To get our man and keep my privacy.
Hoover believed knowledge is power. He used his to hurt a lot of good people. You're using yours to hurt me.
That is ridiculous.
Our second one comes when Red inquires about head care.
What's that smell? Is that lavender? And mint. Is that your head? What kind of products do you use? I'm dying of curiosity.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You smell that?
Yes, it's lovely.
I'll say. Absolutely lovely. Whatever it is, you and I need to get some.
Now, if you always get your man, vote hashtag red knowledge. Or if you smell something lovely, vote hashtag red lavender.
All right, now we go to Special Agent Intel, Cindy Keith. So are we going to be doing the duffel shuffle for the next three episodes? This is excruciating. This is really a pisser. They could have said something just a crumb would do. Waiting is so aggravating. She loves to rhyme.
It was funny. Teresa Skinner said, end the bones, please. I read that in all capital letters because that's how she wrote it.
I hear there's somebody in the office who tweets like that. All right. Courtney Liddy. Hashtag duffel bag of drama. Wait, let me do this next one because this one makes me laugh. Bridget Davis Cohen. Everybody's duffling. Din, 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 din. It's a song. Get it? Everybody's shuffling.
Oh my gosh.
It's funny.
That is so great. All right. This one's actually interesting. So James Lael wrote, by the way, CODIS should have sent Liz a written report on the findings because Tom used her ID. This would have shown up about the time Tom was killed, so it may have been displaced while she was comatose. But in my opinion, I think it's a time bomb.
That's an interesting idea. Good concept.
I think it is probably a miss, too, because it's like, wouldn't she like figured this out by now and gotten the... I agree. Like, where's the report? It could have came when she was comatose. I agree. And maybe it got swept under the rug. Because you still have that theory about it. Cooper's behind it all.
Oh, maybe he like gave a fake email address and that's where they send the findings to. I mean, then there's ways around it if need be.
If need be.
Sure.
But good catch. Good catch.
Yeah, great catch. Rob Eno, mother theory big tonight. Our hash or quote unquote our red didn't know Jennifer. And I have a lot in common with the cross dressing J. Edgar Hoover. Trier Heinrichs must be in heaven.
I laughed.
I wouldn't agree that our red didn't know Jennifer.
I guess it depends on what you want to define as no Jennifer. Like,
he did know her. He said Jennifer. He knew her by name. I'm your daughter. And he said Jennifer. So it's not like she said, hey, by the way, I'm Jennifer.
Well, there's a difference between like, I know Jennifer, like I raised you, brought you up and you are my daughter. And there's Jennifer. Oh, you're that Jennifer. Okay. Connect A to B to C to D. Got it. Okay, Jennifer. Yep, I'm good.
Yeah, he didn't act like we're dads. He didn't do what we probably would have done, which is like, hey, how was fifth grade?
Yeah. Not only would I have taken my finger off the trigger, I probably would have dropped my gun a little bit too. Like I would have been like,
oh, he did. No, he did do that. He did drop his gun. I'm going to be fair. He did. His gun was tilted downward. It's like he didn't want to aim it too much. He wasn't going to move it away, but he wasn't really aimed at her anymore either. If you go back and look at it, he does drop his guard.
Didn't it take a little bit though? It wasn't right away.
Well, he took his finger off the trigger right away. Yes. As soon as he knew who she was, he took his finger off the trigger.
And then as she kept talking, he kind of slowly started to...
It started to sink down a little bit.
Yep. Okay.
So, all right.
Rory chimed in and said, I thought the episode was really good, Ed, leading us down a great path for the last three episodes. Love the planning, which seems a more common theme now. There have been a lot of heist kind of plans lately. I love how Liz turned a bit on Red, but blasted Garvey, but I was a little confused about his quote-unquote daughter. So was the story he told Madeline Pratt made up, or did his family never really die that Christmas night? Look forward to the answers, hopefully, and what you and Aaron have to say about this one, because, you know, I always have a lot to say.
Well, maybe he considers his family dead when he no longer has them, you know, when he has to abandon them, when he has to leave, maybe he considers that dead. You never know. There's a lot of ways you could go with that.
And part of the Christmas Eve story could have just been a story even back then. Like if everything that happened the last 30 years.
I'm starting to think obviously she referenced Christmas Eve. So, or if he weren't, to be fair to the imposter theory people, if he weren't Raymond Reddington, he would know about the Christmas Eve story.
Right. So he's like using the, like he's either he believes it so much that he's using it as a story, or he knows it as a story, so he's using it as a story to keep his cover.
Right. It's something he had to memorize to know the Raymond Reddington that we know.
But it does, but it does tie into that 1989 fire from Requiem, potentially. Because it seemed like it was Christmas time around that 1989 fire that they ran away from to go back to the hotel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wendy Davies, Red gave Garvey an out to live the rest of his days with his missus, which sounded odd coming from his lips, somewhere nice. You must really care for Jennifer and wanting to know the truth, not to take Red up on that offer. I agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
Or he was doing it for the money because he chose not getting the answers that he wanted. He chose money over that.
Yeah, he chose money to begin with because he ended up saying, well, and it's interesting because I think, yeah, money would be the thing because he was willing to give up the duffel bag to keep more money from the Mossadegh situation.
Correct.
So he really didn't want to know the truth. But I think at this point, knowing that he was already, because Mossadegh was dead and the cartel was about, then it's almost like he's red in that regard. Like he has a bone that he just can't get rid of. And so
he does, literally.
So he wants the money, and now because he doesn't have the money, now he wants the information.
How do you keep rolling when that was like funny?
It was funny. I laughed. I chuckled.
I had to stop. I'm still laughing about that. All right, sorry.
Oh, there you go.
One more.
Monica Stolfa. Okay. I'm still gathering the pieces of my blown mind. First, some side notes. Anthony's back. Yeah. Samar and Aram break up. Boo. Sinclair gets away to alibi another day. Red and Dembe are going to use lavender and mint on their scalps. Now then, 30 years is a lie. And she was hiding from him for nothing. Ergo, Jennifer is not our Reddington's daughter. However, our Reddington can still be Liz's dad. Perhaps Jen's dad was a traitor or a spy who was deep in cover and had an affair with Red's wife Our Red and or Katerina had to do away with him. Both Katerina and our Red were betrayed by their governments, and the rest is history. If anybody needs me, I'll be lying on the couch with a bag of ice on my head.
Sure.
Because it's all in play because we didn't get anything.
Yeah. At this point, I'm like, okay, yeah, everything's fair game.
Everything's fair game. Once again.
it's so funny. Yeah, no, but I agree. That was there's a lot there, and I think we'll get something in the next few episodes. I'm almost positive we will. By the end of the season, I think we're going to have a huge revelation of some sort.
Huge.
Huge. Just huge. Anything else you want to say, Troy, on this episode? We've got three more of these bad boys left.
Yep, and we are doing them on Wednesday nights right after the show, so anything that we missed, obviously don't hold it against us because we just watched it, and we just want to get it out to you guys, and thanks for listening and sticking with us, and it'll be a fun 3 weeks.
Oh, also, if you're a Westworld fan, our new podcast, or not, it's not new, but we covered season one, but our podcast for Westworld, Beyond Westworld, is live, and we've already got two new episodes on there, so you can definitely head over to BeyondWestworldPodcast.com, and you can enjoy the fun, because we love that show, too.
Yeah, that one definitely goes a lot longer. A lot longer.
There's a lot of stuff.
A lot of theorizing. So all of you would love it because you guys are the big theorists that we know out in the world.
Oh, if you ain't watching it. Yeah, I said ain't. Yeah, so what? Ain't. Get on it. Like, seriously, get on it. And also, another thing you can get on, one more time. If you haven't seen it, 20 weeks is Amir Arison's new movie. We talked about it in the interview last week, but I don't know if everybody always listens to those interviews. So if you didn't, be sure to check the movie out. It's a really sweet film that's not so sweet. So it's worth seeing him in a different light.
Yes. iTunes, Amazon, and wherever video on demand service you have.
Yep. And I hope you guys understand. We love the show. We just had to air some frustrations. Hope you understood. And I'm sure we'll find from the listeners and everyone else what they thought of our take on this very soon. Like, very soon. Probably by the time I wake up.
I'm not even going to edit this one. I'm just going to wing it.
All right. Well, that'll conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, and let us know if you threw your remote at the TV like me.
You're so angry. You can also subscribe to our show. I ain't throwing my remote because that's expensive.
Well, you got a brand new TV. Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Sure do. And I ain't about to throw anything at anything. All right. I'm going to calmly get up and just turn the channel.
I was trying to get my new TV for myself. That was the plan.
You can also subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or your favorite podcast player of choice. You can listen from the website as well. But if you're really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android powered by Spreaker. You'll also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for Ian Garvey or Ian Garvey by visiting TheBlacklistExposed.com. Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Is it time to clarify the relationship?
Exclamation point.
Not question mark, just exclamation point?
Exclamation point.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We're going to have a fun 3 episodes. I can't wait. And next week, something's going to happen to a character, but I'm not going to say who in case you didn't watch the preview.
Oh, you watched the preview?
Yeah, because I was still stunned and staring at my TV and wondering if I should throw my remote at it. So, yeah, I was still staring.
I did not watch the preview.
No. Well, then I'm glad I didn't say who.
I think I know.
I think you know. All right, guys. Well, you take care.
All right. We'll see you. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.